Thank you all for joining the Latin Generation panel call on 25th of July 2019. In the call, we have Bill, Marjana, Michael, Mako, Dennis, Hassem, Mats, and Pitinan. Over to you, Dennis.
Thank you, Pitinan. Welcome, everyone. So let's jump right into the document, IDNA compatibility. Pitinan, if you could be kind to share that on your screen, please. Thank you.
Sure. Give me a second, finding the window.
So while we have that on the screen, thank you. I've seen some comments on the documents. I think it's good to clarify that disposition values, when we are talking about variance and we determine a disposition value that is either of the two values, allocatable or block, those do not prescribe how those variants are going to be managed, right? Allocatable means that it could be delegated, that is activated into the DNS, sorry. And block means that it has to be withheld from registration, right? Nobody can get it. As far as how those variants are managed, whether they go to the same registrar or not, that's a policy conversation that it's being held right now in the at the ENSO and CCNSO, right? As you may already know, variant TLDs are prohibited from delegation in the root zone until there is a variant management mechanism to, you know, manage all these variants, domain names in the root. So, that's basically to answer Bill's comment. Bill, does that answer your question? I see your hands raised. Please go ahead.
No. Are you saying that the current situation is not that the registries are required to allocate variants only to the same registrant as holds the existing registration with a different variant? I understand that the registries are pushing back, but are you saying that that's not the current policy?
Not that the registries are pushing back. They're still up for debate mechanism because there is no single mechanism to do that. Registry, at this point, registry operates, and right now there is no variant TLD. So the comments that I'm about to say, it's on the context of second level domain names, right? So for second level domain name variants, it's up to the registry operator to set up their own policies as to what is a variant and how they manage those, right? For example, just because we're talking about the sharp S, DNIC policy is to, there is no variant relationship between sharp S and SS. So there are different registrations, and they ask different registrations. They can be registered by different registrants, right? I am not aware of other, Switch does not offer sharp S. AT does not offer sharp S. So, there is no other example that we can use in the terms of sharp S. So the only example that we have, they treat those character sets differently, right? As a different independent registrations. To answer your point, it's up to the registry operator to define their variant policy and how they manage those.
So, that My understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that while the GTLDs are free to do anything they like, you know, .de or .uk or whoever, the TLDs that are not geographically based, like, you know, .com, .org, et cetera, are in their contracts restricted as to what they can do with variants. Are you telling me that that is not, in fact, what is in the contracts for those non-GTLD registries?
Right. And so just a distinction, right? DE is a CCTLD, and basically the rest are GTLDs. And to answer your question, no, GTLDs up to now, they don't have any requirement as to how to treat variants. There is an understanding. I know this because of the way we treated Chinese, for example, is that one variant blocks the other. Just as an example, .com does not activate variants. So we generate the variants of one per our Chinese tables. And if there's a variant, we block those, but there is no activation. So there may be other registries that have a different policy than by which they want to offer those variants to the same registrant. But again, that's a registry policy let me backtrack. So GTLD, there is a variant clause in certain registry agreements where it says variants need to be blocked or can be activated. And there are certain contracts, now that I'm rethinking or recalling, there are certain contracts that allow variant activation to the same registrant. So Bill, you are correct. In certain registry agreements, they calculate variants and they need to assign those or allocate those to the same registrant.
Thank you.
Welcome. Mats.
Yes, I would say that if we talk about the so-called new GTLDs, those that were created through the program that started in 2012, all these have some clause about variants in their contract, and some of them, it's stated that it's blocked, so they may not even create any variants. And others have the clause that say that it's blocked by default, but it can be activated by the same registrant. I don't think anyone has a contract that allows them to freely use the variants, actually. But here we talk about TLDs, and not about it's the second level. So we should make that distinction. So the assumption here that we take is that if a variant is created, a variant TLD is created, then that goes to the same registry operator as the base or vanilla TLD, but maybe that assumption is not necessarily true. If it doesn't, I don't think that variants make any sense.
I'm sorry, Matt, can you repeat that? Does that make sense?
Right. If the variant doesn't go back to the same registry operator as the base TLD, the concept of variant does not really make any sense. Because, I mean, if we see the variant as alternative of the same thing, and if they go completely different ways, it doesn't make sense to call them variants.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. So yeah, I mean, at this point, TLD variants are not prohibited. So there is current work that it's going to be initiated or has been initiated in to some extent and needs to find its way to policing how these TLDs, variant TLDs, need to be managed in order for them to, you know, lift the prohibition of those in the root zone. And the desired state is, yes, I mean, to your point, that variant TLDs need to go to the same registry operator and to some extent to the same back end as well. But that's, but often when we have discussed this, I think there is a notion that if we make a variant allocatable, that means immediately that those variant TLDs are going to resolve to the same web asset, right? Whether it's email records or a web record. So there is, and that's where I think some of us are reaching to the misleading conclusion that making variant allocatables, you will guarantee that the DNS resolution will, you know, you will have on the same, if you make them allocatable, the DNS resolution for both domain names are going to be the same, and that's wrong. Because there are several steps for variant TLDs. Right? The root zone LGR determines two labels, variants of each other, but there's going to be a whole process for registry operators to apply for each of these labels. And the current thinking is that each of these variant labels are independent of each other, I mean, from an application standpoint. So the registry operator, the applicant, will need to decide which one they want. And the other is going to be either they want both and they have to go through the process for both, or they just want one and the other one is going to be stay in reserve mode, right? But not activated at all. So we need to think about as we are going through this exercise. With that, let me pause and see the queue. I have Michael and then Mats.
Yes, thank you. I just want to point out that, for example, the Arabic community is still working on the labor generation rules for the second level, and they're deviating from the concept of blocked and allocatable, that is a two-part distinction, and they're trying to introduce a three-part distinction, which is blocked, allocatable, activated. So for such cases, as for example, the double S as opposed to SSET, they're suggesting that some variants are automatically activated to ensure reachability and accessibility. But I agree that some of us may overjudge the implication of making something allocatable, but what we are doing, we can't ensure activation, but we can stop misuse and allocation to a different party. So it doesn't ensure usability, but it does stop abuse, I think. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. That's a very good point, right? And that's what the stability looking at two different issues, right? One is denial of service and one misconnection. You're talking about the misconnection, right? Preventing a variant label going to someone else by making them variants, you will, to some extent, deal with that issue. Mats, please go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's important not to assume that if there are variants that they will present the same information. I mean, we talk about the second level that someone else has registered, even if they register all the variants of that's possible, they might want to present different material depending on the variant. And also a comment about the existing SSET. There are some gTLDs that allow SSET to be registered, so in German IDN table. So there could theoretically be some domain names registered with SSET. I don't remember that anyone has created the variant between SSET and double S. I don't think so. I don't think I've seen it.
Thank you, Matt. Any other comments on that regard, as far as the difference between a locatable block and the implications of it? All right. Seeing Michael says, yes, we do in our TLD. So when you say we do, Michael said you are the TLDs that you support, you have a variant relationship between the sharp S and the sequence SS. Is that what you are saying?
No, I meant we support the S set letter in second level domains, but without a variant relationship.
Okay, thank you. So yeah, so basically the same thing that .de is doing. They support the sharp S, but no variant relationship.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. All right, so let's move on. Last week, we left at looking the weighted decision metrics, and we were starting to do the exercise of so before we do that, and since we have Michael here, I just want to ask, Michael, did you at all review your flowcharts?
I didn't review it in that sense. I saw the email you sent, and you actually pointed out something. I'm trying to find it.
Okay.
Let me look for your email.
Yeah, if there isn't, I was just trying to determine whether we still need to go through this, or we just can skip it and continue our rating exercise of the different options.
We can continue and return to it in another point. It's just a suggestion to make the issue more understandable to readers, and more understandable also to people participating in the group. That's the whole purpose of it. So, but we can go on and return to it at a later stage if you still don't find it satisfactory. I was trying to refer to your email you sent, but we can go on and discuss that another time.
Okay, thank you. All right, so Pitina, if you can scroll down up to the point of the table. Thank you. There we are. Yes. Okay, so last time around, we determined four attributes. I saw Michael chiming in, sending a comment as to the attributes that we have. Michael, do you care to elaborate, please?
I just sent an email yesterday about that. That in my opinion, attribute for the usability, predictable label resolution, it's actually logical equivalent to the one and or two, and for that reason, I think it should be removed because it's just giving it its own weight gives the wrong impression and wrong get the figures won't match. Because from my point of view, if DOS denial of service is not prevented, then it logically follows that the label resolution is also not always predictable. And in the same way, if misconnection is not prevented, then also the label resolution is not always predictable. So unless you know of any other cases that could cause unpredictable labor resolution, I think that one or two is equivalent to four.
Thank you, Michael. Any other views? So basically, Michael, what he's suggesting is we drop row number four, which is its usability, predictable level resolution, and keep just the three above. No comments.
There's an agree comment from Michael in the chat.
Mm-hmm. Michael, do you care to elaborate?
There's not much to elaborate beyond what Michael said. I also think that usability essentially depends on misconnection and denial of service. Thank you.
Okay, so let's do this. So usability. So if we drop this. We can go back to our table. So we need to, again here, redistribute the weights on each of these attributes. And just for everybody's benefit, right? What we are measuring here is try to reconcile stability versus inclusion. Stability of the root zone versus inclusion of a copoint, right? That's the framework that we're trying to determine, to reconcile what's more important and the different options that give us, you know, a way to resolve whether to include or not include, and if we include it, how do we include it? I see hands up. Go Mats and then Michael.
Yeah, definitely prevents misconnection is the most important factor to look at. And then the second one is prevent denial of service, and availability is the least important of these three. It's hard to set exact figures on it.
Thank you, Mats. Yes, I think we can first, let's use number right here. I mean, this is most important one. I think we can agree on that one, and that's how, and then we can think about how much we weight one another. But yes, preventing misconnection is very important, followed by denial service, and then followed by availability at the top level. So basically inclusion of it, right? Mika, please go ahead.
Yes, I just want to point out that I don't think that necessarily stability of the root zone and inclusion of a code point are in opposition. So this padding is kind of suggestive in my eyes for a choice which need not be made necessarily. Thank you. I I'm sorry, was I heard or understood?
It was heard, and I want to make a comment.
Okay, Matt, go ahead.
Yeah, I don't think that we should look at it as in opposition, but there are two factors that we should look at. So stability of the root zone is one factor that we should look at, and the desire to include characters or to make characters available for TLDs is another factor. So those two factors we should balance. That's how I see it.
Thank you, Matt. I think that's a very valid point and addresses Michael's and Michael's. Right? I think that's well said. We're trying to balance the stability of the root zone and inclusion of a code point and see what makes sense. And again, that goes back to the principle of the inclusion approach, right? The inclusion principle. We need to weigh the merits of each code point vis-a-vis the stability and the usage and other factors in order to make a decision and determination whether a code point is suitable for the root zone. Okay, Michael, is that a new hand?
Yes, there was another question I would like to ask.
Yes, please go ahead.
Before, Matt suggested that there was a natural hierarchy for these attributes, that is, misconnection was more important than denial of service, which was more important than availability. So I agree about misconnection being the first priority because it relates inherently to the basic stability of the root zone. But why exactly is denial of service more important than availability?
So denial of service is that you type a domain name and you go to an empty page because that domain name does not exist, it's not registered or blocked, right? So it's the case where you are using Chrome, which is implementing IDNA 2003 mapping, and you type the correctly domain name that you want to go to using the sharp S. And because of Chrome's behavior, you end up going to a different domain name.
No.
Which does not exist.
Okay.
Yeah, which does not exist. Bill, I have Kans, Bill, then Mats.
Just to maybe kickstart the discussion, I would propose doing weights of 25, 50, and 25 for our three criteria there, just to get the discussion started. Thank you.
Were those the numbers, Bill?
Yes. As I said, this is just a starting point for the discussion. I'm not arguing for it particularly at this point.
Gotcha. Thank you. I think we will need to adjust. If we agree that denial service is more important than availability, we need to do this at least just to signal that weight. Mats, please go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, denial of service is that something exists, but you can't reach it. So availability is that a TLD does not exist. So I think that's a very important difference.
So let's read the definition. And this is an adaptation to what it's found in, I believe, SAC 060, right? So denial of service, the user intends to navigate to example.fuzz, but the application sends the user to example.fuzz with OLS, which doesn't exist because the domain name is not registered or is blocked or withheld. So again, it's an adaptation of SAG report number 60.
Is this the recommendation 7 you just read? Let me put the URL in the chat.
But that's a recommendation. There is a longer text with the definition of each, I believe. There you go. Again, it's not the same thing word by word because this is kind of a different case, but I mean, trying to get a sense of it. So give you a few seconds to ingest that. So let's continue with here our conversation. I have Michael and then Bill.
Thank you. Within the definition, I assume that withheld means allocatable but not allocated, correct?
Withheld could be that it's allocated but not, it's allocated but not activated.
I'm sorry, it's allocated but not activated?
Correct, yeah.
Could you explain that, please?
So allocation is just you are earmarking domain name to somebody, but it's not activated in the DNS. It does not have DNS records. So you intend to surf it, navigate to that page, but it doesn't exist.
I'm sorry, I understood that, but if something is allocatable, and someone goes to the registrars and says, I actually want that variant to be allocated, then in this moment it will automatically be activated at the same time, will it not?
No. That depends on the registrar model, but you can allocate a domain name and then activate it. It's not automatically one or the other. I mean, registrars can make your service go as fast as they want, but of course there's something happening in the back end, but you can separate allocation. It's for you, it's there, but it's not yet activated. So there is no resolution. So there are two different steps in the process. It could be that some registrars, they allocated you and asked you for DNS records, or they put DNS records for you in order to show a page, and they can do that, and you have something there, but it's not always the case.
Okay, thanks for the explanation. Then there was a second comment I wanted to make regarding the question whether availability is more important than denial of service or not. And to give an example, which comes to my mind, is that people have already long started allocating internationalized email addresses in Arabic and Chinese, and there are clearly many cases where denial of service takes place. So you cannot write or receive emails depending on which locale you have on your computer, which email client you're using, what's your email service, et cetera. Still, people are allocating that, and they're doing that a lot. And they're actually looking for workarounds while the system is not being implemented in a stringent manner, as is the situation, for example, with WS as opposed to SZ. So if we look at international email availability, I think it's a clear case that availability is more important than actual servability in the sense of denial of service potentially taking place. I hope that's clear. Thank you.
I understand what you're saying, Megan. Let me just quickly react to that. So those email addresses exist just because it's the policy of those managing that server. They want to have those domain names or email addresses, as an example you use. But it's up to them, a company's policy, to define and determine what they want to offer. I mean, we just can assume that they already study, analyze the state of international email address support and interoperability. And if they decided to allow for that to happen, knowing that some email servers are not ready to support that, I mean, that's up to them. Our work here is to define their LGR for the root zone, and that's how we need to look at this through the lenses of we are the ones setting up the policy regardless of what's happening outside, right? Or other, like you're the example of the email, it's up to the company's policy to define what they want to offer, but it's up to them, right? I don't think we find that example relevant to this work. Since I don't know how the queue went up. So was that Michael, is that a new hand or was Bill first? I don't think this tool manages the queue that well. So who was first? Was it Bill or was it Michael?
I still have my hand up because I would like to reply to your comment, but I can let Bill go first. That's fine.
Well, that's all right. If you're replying to his comment, you go first, please.
Thank you. So I'm sorry I didn't quite understand, Dennis, why this example I gave is not applicable, because we're talking about major stakeholders here, Dennis. For example, Google started allocating such email addresses. So if major players are actually participating in such a way that they are opting for availability over serviceability in such markets, then clearly there is a need for having more availability of more labels because of a more allocatable elements that is part, things which are part of the repertoire. So I think this is clearly an argument in favor that availability is more important, because the issue has not subsided, and some of these players have actually conducted market research on those things. For example, I've participated in discussions among the Arabic script community where they were discussing email accessibility and suggesting solutions. Because it's very important for their community, as well as, for example, also I think the Chinese community, and they have particularly stepped forward about solutions from that. But again, if people present imperfect products because they know it is more important that the product is in the market rather than that it's perfect, I think this is clearly a cue for what should guide our work and what's relevant to us. So I don't see how this is not relevant. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Bill, please go ahead.
Maybe it's just me, but it seems to me that if I've understood you correctly, what we're talking about in the first section there, where somebody types in an address and gets nowhere because that particular TLDs doesn't exist, that's not denial of service, that's failure of service. And I think it would be clearer for the readers if we phrased it that way. Thank you.
We can use other terminology if that's the case, since we're defining here, adapting the definition. I'm not against that. Um, Megal again and the Mats.
Thank you. One more thing which came to my mind is that also denial of service can occur for a million reasons, all relating to software platforms, hardware platforms, locales, and all these kind of things. So it's kind of like the factor which is the most out of our hands and which we have the least influence over. So even if we opt for a high-level stability, there may be still be so many levels beyond which may or may not be unstable. So, yeah, there are just so many more factors involved for denial of service, I think, than, for example, for misconnection and for availability. Thank you.
Matt?
Yeah, as I see it, denial of service is when a domain exists, but you cannot reach it. And of course, the software and systems are involved there. Here we talk about Chrome's behavior of handling ESET. That's the software behavior. Ability and in the TLD is the question if a certain label could be registered at all, could be used at all. So that's a different, those are different things. Misconnection is also depending on software behavior. So I don't see how we could be discussing this without considering the behavior of software.
Thank you, Mats. But we are considering behavior software, right? This is the case where we have this PT9. If you go back to the document on the first part, the context of this analysis is because of the browser behavior and how it treats these labels, right? A label that contains this code point is treated differently. So we are taking into account the browser behavior in this case, and there may be other applications as well related to that. For example, a registrar does not support IDNA 2008 fully, and a registrant wants to register FAS using the asset, but the registrar denies that. Even though, for example, it's going to be, you know, it's available in the TLD, right? Per the TLD policies. I'm talking right now at the second level domain name because that's what it's available. But if you happen to experience certain registrars, I mean, maybe registrars do not support as well either. So to your point, Matt, we are considering browser behavior, and that's the whole point of this conversation, right? The browser behavior is introducing stability issues regarding this code point. So here's where we need to balance, and maybe that's the first point. I mean, noting we have 13 minutes to go, we have to come to an agreement. What's most important? Is it most important stability, or is it most important inclusion? Because that will affect the weights that we want to give to each of the attributes. Pitinan, could you scroll down again now to the table, please? Thank you. So do we have an agreement on these three attributes? Can you show your hands or yes or no on your using your voting buttons, please?
Agreement with the attributes or the weight?
Attributes. First attributes. Okay, so I have one opposing view. Bill, can you do you want to elaborate on why you don't agree with these three attributes?
I don't see that the first attribute is a factor in stability, and neither do I see where it's a inclusion issue. It's a usability issue, but I don't see that it's a matter of stability or inclusion. Thank you.
So here, so let me address that quickly. So here what we want to decide is whether there are merits to include sharp S, right? That's the whole point. And we're looking through the lens of the issue, which is a stability issue, and a stability issue. So that comes down to those two factors. We need to balance the stability of the root zone and the inclusion of this code point. But you're saying that none of those are relevant?
I think the second and third one certainly apply to are both, you know, the second one is about stability and the third one is about inclusion. I'm just saying the first one does not fit either of the two issues that you have in the title of the spreadsheet there.
Okay, let's pause. Let's hear Matt.
But Bill, if you cannot reach a certain domain, then wouldn't you say that that affects the stability of the root?
If you can't reach it because it simply doesn't exist, then no, I don't think that's a stability issue.
Yeah, but that's not because it doesn't exist. It's denial of service. You see, there is a top level domain FAS with EstSet, but certain users cannot reach it because they are redirected to a non-existing FAS with double S.
Okay. All right. No, I had misunderstood. Thank you for clarifying that.
So that's the denial of service. The third one is no, EstSet is not even available for registration.
Okay. I had misunderstood the issue there. Thank you for clarifying that.
Thank you, Matt. So I guess, Bill, that will change your heart to the three attributes?
That will change my primary one. Now I have to go back and rethink it. You might pick up Mikkel's raised hand first.
Okay. All right. Mikkel, please go ahead.
I just wanted to point out or clarify that denial of service has a smaller scope than misconnection, right? Because denial of service mostly takes place at the level of the browser and stuff like that, whereas misconnection takes place at a higher level because something should be a variant and is not a variant. That's my understanding. So the scope is larger for one than the other, right?
No, it doesn't have to be. They don't have to be variants. I mean, that's misconnection is because you are you intend to go to a domain in FAS with a sharp S, and you end up with expecting a website, right? A certain website, a blue website. Let's you know, picture a blue website. That's what you expect, but you turn out into a red website. Whose domain name is .fass, F-A-S-S. And that was because they were treated as a separate registrations, and one is owned by a certain registrant, and the other one to the other one, right? But in the middle of this, your user experience, somebody messed up your request because you, you were expecting to reach out to .fast with sharp S and you ended up with fast with double S.
Exactly. So the motivation is the expectation on the part of the user, what should be shown, but it applies to all users, irrespective of their platform, irrespective of their software, irrespective of their browser, and so on, right?
Yeah, the user is the one to visit the website they intended to.
Yes, but my point is that it applies to all users across all browsers and so on.
Yeah, the expectation if the user is using Safari or Chrome or whatever browser, it should resolve to the website they intended to.
Sorry, maybe I didn't but ask my question in the right way. What I meant is
make a
connection.
Not all of them would go to the wrong. Some will go to the right and others will go to the wrong website because they use different browsers with different behavior when it comes to handling sharp S.
Yeah, and
this applies in the case of misconnection too?
This is misconnection, yes.
But my understanding is misconnection only if two things are not made a variant. So it's at the registry level. So it's at the top level. So it applies to all users, irrespective of their platform. Whereas denial of service or failure of service is dependent on the user's platform.
No, both of them are dependent on. Both of them are dependent on the user's platform. In preventing denial of service, then in that case, it does not exist. The alternative does not exist. The double S does not exist. And in the second one, both of them exist, but they are separate. They're not connected. So in the first case, you get nothing. In the second case, you go to the wrong place.
You may go to the wrong place. I mean, that's, I think, to be fair, right?
Depending on the platform you use, you can go to the right place or the wrong place.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, I understood that. But how is misconnection dependent on whether I use Firefox or Chrome or Edge?
So if you use Chrome, you cannot reach fast.de with sharp S because they will always redirect that to fast.de with double S. So if you want to go to fast.de with sharp S, you cannot, and you go to the wrong place.
So let's picture this example, right? We have this. Can we go up, Peter, please? And I do have a hard stop in 3 minutes. I need to join a different call. So let's say the user all the way up to the IDNA 2003 and table. Yep, to see that. So let's say I'm the user and I want to visit the website fast.de, fast as in fasharps.de, and I'm using a Chrome table, right? And let's assume I registered this with DNIC, which is actually the case because of the extension .de. And there's another domain name, fast the files with double S, right? Those two exist differently because that's the register operator policy. They are independent registrations, so they are both owned by different registrants and therefore different websites, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm the user, I'm using Chrome, I'm using Apple Safari, which is fully IDNA 2008. So I type fasharps.de and I end up in fasharps.de, the website that I intended to go. Okay? So there is no issue there. If I use Chrome, I type into or click into a link fasharps.de, and my browser, Chrome browser, will direct me to fa.de, fass.de. So that's where misconnection happens, right? Because that was also registered and it's owned by a different registrant, therefore they put up a different website. Now, and that's misconnection. Assume we are on the same registry, the FAS.de with SharpS exists, but the FAS with double S.de does not exist. It was not registered. It's available for registration, but nobody to this point registered it. Again, I'm a user, want to use Chrome. I type or click on my link, FAS.de with SharpS, but the Chrome browser will direct me to FAS.de with double S. Because there was no registration, I go to an empty page and never go to the website that I intended to, and therefore that's the denial of service problem, right? So I hope that clarifies to a certain point. And I'm sorry, but I really have to drop now. I mean, because I need to join another call right now. So yes, Mirjana, I'll turn the call back to you so you can finish it. Thank you, and I'll see. I guess we'll talk next week.
Hello, everyone. If you hear me, because this connection is not very stable, we shall continue next week with the same agenda and try to resolve clear all the problems. And I will close the meeting now. Michael, do you want to say something because your hand is still up?
Sorry, I forgot lowering it. No, I'm fine.
Oh, okay. You are hearing me now. That's good. And I'm closing the meeting and see you next time. And thank you all for being present to this meeting. Next time I will have better connection, better internet connection. Hear you next week. Have a nice rest of the day. Goodbye. Meeting and we are closing.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you. Goodbye. Thank you. Bye-bye.